For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Jim Fuel, returning for another weekly look at the world of non-league football. And a welcome back to you all, and to Dave Anderson. Sorry about that. Dave, not looking much older than when I last saw that smiling face, but the documentation says otherwise. Did you have a good birthday?
I did, yes. I had a lovely other week off last week, as you know, from the show. And I've had good fun. I had a bit of fun with the kids and just had a Nando's, to be honest. You know, if they want to send me some vouchers for that plug, I'm
going
I'm
super trendy.
Yeah. But it was good. And but I've been fortunate, you know, I'm a lot luckier than other people where effectively you're the same, Tim. We can get into games and I've been doing that a bit more than I have of recent times. I've watched a lot of football. Went to Bromley and Barnet at the weekend, you know. Well, you know, because you have to email for the pass for me, but fantastic game of football. And funny enough, when you sort of think you're old and past it, there was two guys that, like, Paul Fairclough is sort of stood in at Barnet because Tim Flowers has left. I played against Paul back in the day, and Neil Smith in the Bromley dugout, who I played against as well as a manager. So it was interesting watching sort of two of the older guys, and they won't mind me saying experience. Let's use the word experience. Two very experienced managers argue with referees every bit as much as I used to, you know. But it was a 2-2 draw. There was two people sent off. Neil Smith was sent off, so two players, one manager, two penalties. The referee was awful. You know, was just as bad as I've seen for a long time. Maybe an off day, you know. I'm not saying he's like that every week, but I sat in the stand and I was going to stay and interview Neil Smith, but I didn't. I thought I'd leave him alone. He had a hard.
But maybe that's why he got sent off, so we could speak to you early.
I know exactly why he got sent off. I seen the decision. It was terrible, but it's good to, you know, good to see that the guys sort of working, and it's the first time I've been back to Bromley for years, Tim, you know, like quite a long time. And my goodness,
it's very different,
what a change.
Hazeline, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, what a change. You know, the big stand behind the goal, the 4G, just real tidy ground now, tidy little ground. I always liked going there. It was always one of them grounds where something happened to me in it. You know, we broke a British record there. I remember that was the day we broke it, and we lost it there. We lost our game there. So it's one of them games, them grounds that comes back to me. But brilliant to see it, and another great game of football. And, you know, if people are listening, you know, I'm not trying to rub your nose into it if you're a Bromley or a Barnet supporter, but it was a proper game of football.
Yeah, it's been an odd week with the news last Friday that the step two is going to be null and voided. Now, I spoke to Alex Petherham, the joint chairman at Gloucester City, on Friday evening, and I don't think he'd mind me saying that he sounded like a broken man. It was certainly, you could sense the stuffing had been knocked out of him. I think tiredness more than anything. I mean, we mentioned week in, week out about the hours and the grinds that people behind the scenes put in, but I think the chairman behind the campaign to get these plans to resurrect step two have to be applauded, along with the National League, for actually having the discussions and opening that up. For now, I think there may be some, you know, a further legal avenue that some people may be looking to go down. But it looks like they just need to pick themselves up and plan for next season, which isn't going to be easy after that sort of... it's a bit like, I suppose, losing in the playoffs.
Yeah. There'll be a reaction to it. I would say I spoke to Alex as well, very briefly. Broken, I don't know... Don't know about broken. I think he's a guy it'd be hard to break. He's got steel about him, and he voices his opinion. He's not scared to.
He'll be back, I'm sure, before the end of the season.
I quite like that. I mean, my own view of it. I mean, we were aware that there was stuff going on behind the scenes, as has been said. But we had to keep quiet for the benefit of everyone involved, and I hope people would understand that. My view of it is that if they got it going, and they got the 18 teams that they were talking about, then fine. I didn't have an issue with it. I did at the start. It's funny, isn't it? Mm. When it first got spoke about, I thought, ah, I don't really, it's not for me. You know, it's not normal. But then it's not normal times. Towards the end of it, when I spoke to Mark White and Alex, I bought into what they were saying. You know, I bought into the fact that they wanted to play, that get other people involved in playing. Why not have a goal? So I was fine if it happened. But I was also okay if it didn't, because I haven't invested in it. So it's a little bit easier when you're not invested. I am looking forward to seeing what the rhyme and reason behind not allowing it to go forward. And I'll sort of make a judgment when I see that. But I feel for the guys who put a lot of work into it, Tim. So much easier for us to go, well, they tried and unlucky. It's easy for us to say that. But we know for a fact that lots of people put lots and lots of time into it. Mm-hmm.
And so that leaves us really with just step one, the National League, which does continue. And I think we really have to make mention of Sutton United. We spoke with an old friend of the show, Matt Gray, earlier this year, didn't we? But now they're top of the division, 6 points clear and three games in hand.
Yeah, no, I've been giving them a bit of stick, to be honest, between me, you, and the listeners. But because he won Manager of the Month, didn't he, last week, was it?
Yeah.
And I dropped him a text going with a screenshot of it, going, never going to hear the end of this, you know, with an exclamation mark. And I just put as a footnote, I must add, I actually won Manager of the Year, you know, just, you know, before you get out of your chair, you know. But he always comes back, and he's a big mate of ours, and I play a lot of golf with Matt, and his assistant was my assistant, Jason, and I had no doubt they'd be successful. Did I think they'd be as successful as they are at the moment? I'm not sure I'd ever admit that I knew that they'd be top of the league. I think the job they're doing is magnificent. I would say that they would admit as well that, see, because it's March, everybody thinks we're virtually there. You know, your body clock says March, they must have nearly won the league. Whereas the reality is it's Christmas, isn't it?
Yeah.
In league terms. So they'll know that. But I'm delighted for them. They're good guys. And yeah, and look, Gary, I know Gary Johnson. I know the Johnson family well. And you know, people in and around the top. It's a long, long way to go. But we've got to be saying nice things about Matt, because no doubt we'll need him to come on soon.
Well, you say it's still early days in the season, but it's probably, I guess it's time that we... again, spoke about the issue of the 3G pitch, and you know, Matt told us that if the chance came up for promotion or having a new grass pitch, they'd have to go with the new grass pitch and rip up the 3G. But yeah, you know, in a time when we're talking about clubs struggling for finance, it does seem ludicrous that we'll get a club that will, in order to take the promotion, they'll have to rip up their biggest asset that brings in the majority of their income when they're in normal times, and hopefully we'll get there for that, to put down a grass pitch, which is going to cost a fortune, which won't be ready to play proper football on, because grass pitches take some time to bed in, and it would only have a couple of months. I've been trying to get an interview with the English Football League chief exec, Rick Parry. I know Phil would come on the show really in his place. I'll keep trying on that one, because that's one of the questions I'd love to put to him. Yeah. You know, if 3G pitches are good enough for the World Cup, why aren't they good enough for the league too?
Absolutely. And Northern Ireland, the Irish League, the Crusaders have won, I think Cliftonville, you know, and again, they play in Europe. So the answer is, you know, that you need to get them on. They need to tell us why it's not good enough for Division Two. I think it has to be, there has to come a day when they hold their hands up and go, good enough for international football, good enough for us. A couple of things about that. I mean, I spoke to Matt a little while ago, and he had told me privately that they were going to get some investment. There was discussions about someone coming in to invest in the club. That's been released this week. I don't know why you've seen that, Tim. I think it might be an American sort of guy, or certainly his company's American, and they want to invest in Sutton. that's been in the background for a little while. That'll be good. What a good time for that to come in, you know, if it's a proper investor for to sort of regenerate the stadium, you know, as much as I love Sutton, you know, it's a stadium that could do with a facelift. But to go with the success they're now getting on the pitch. No one is ever going to, you know, people say, well, look, it's all about playing on grass. Ideally, it's all about playing on grass, but I think that ship sailed. I think there is an argument now that league football should be played on 4G if it is off the spec that Sutton's is.
Yeah, and obviously one of the other questions, until I see something in writing from the EFL that it's going to be two up, two down, and they're going to apply the rules, there's still a nag at the back of my head what's going to happen at the end of the National League. And we don't know what's going to happen, if there's going to be a relegation out of Step 1 either this year. So, I mean, that could maybe have an impact on what decision that they make. And,
Sorry to interrupt you. I can't see how they can now relegate. You know, I just can't. My fear of the National League is that once they say there is no relegation, what happens to the clubs? Well, Dover have made their case playing that they're not playing. But there's been other clubs who have made noises that they're going to furlough people and stop playing. What happens if four or five of them don't? You know, that's I know it's questions we've asked everyone, and it's questions we've asked. It seems to be week after week, but no one's given us an answer yet. So yeah, Rick Parry. Well, see what we need to do. We need to get Rick Parry on and get Phil Parry to interview him.
we'll see if we can make the connection. Quickly as well, before we move on to our guests, news last week of the non-league finals days that are going to be played at Wembley. The 2019-20 finals are going to have to be behind closed doors on Monday the 3rd of May. They get their Wembley final, but they could have got that Wembley final earlier on in the season. I think that's they're now going to play with players that weren't involved when they qualified for the final, and it's going to be a very different experience.
Yes, it is. It is, and but I'm guessing that everyone involved would rather play at Wembley as not play at Wembley. So they'll get to have the experience of that, and I feel for them that they don't get the whole deal. But it's of normal times, I think, to get them to Wembley and let the guys. You know, I was saying to someone we were talking about the other week about effectively Churchy's held the trophy for 2 years. The next team's going to hold it for 2 weeks, really. And I think they'll be happy to do that. If I put myself in their position, I'm feeling desperately unlucky about what's happened. But if you give me the chance, I'm going to go and play at Wembley.
Yeah, as someone pointed out to me, when the pubs finally open, you'll go to the one that smells of urine and has sticky floors, if it's the only one you can go to. One last thing. On last week's show, we've had a number of inquiries about last week's show when we spoke with Mark Coote, the Whiteleaf chairman. We did put to him about the rumours that there was in dispute with their new landlords, Irma, and he admitted it would be good to sit down with them properly, but that denied that the lease had been ended or handed back, and confirmed that the legal agreement remained good and was still in place. As ever, we like to seek both sides, so we have asked Irma for confirmation of their position, for a statement on their long-term intentions at Whiteleaf, as well as the two other non-league grounds that we understand that they're taking interest in. And at the time of recording, we have had no response, but we'll try again and keep monitoring the situation, just in the interest of non-league football.
I would say let's try them again this week and the week after and the week after that, and let's not let them out of the headlines.
Yeah, there's an interesting connection with a very famous footballer with this company, and it would be good to just get, you know, if they want to invest in non-league football and non-league facilities, brilliant. But we want to make sure that it's all for the right reasons, and we'll keep an eye on the Whiteleaf situation as well. But this is, you know, We've only got one guest this week, which makes it for a slightly different show. We like to have two, three, four on, but I think it's important that this week's guests, we hear what he's got to say, because he's got some a brilliant background and an understanding, and is important in the non-league game. But there are always a number of stories that we're following, pursuing, and just trying to knock the doors down on. And if anybody has got a similar story, do get in touch with us, and we'll try and follow it up for you. So in recent weeks, we've had the CEO of the National League, the chairman of the Northern Premier League, the chairman of the Isthmian League, giving their thoughts and insight into the current state of the non-league game. So it's a bit like completing the property set and a game of Monopoly, this, or winning a hand in Gin Rummy. We welcome this week's guest. Like so many of those previously mentioned, he wears so many hats in helping guide and represent the non-league game. It's a privilege to welcome to the Non-League Football Show Vice Chairman of the Southern League, Mr. Anthony Hughes.
Hi, Jase. Nice to be here.
Well, it's good to get you on, Anthony, and thanks for joining us. It's
pleasure.
It's perhaps an overused word, but in terms of your decades involved in non-league football, this season has been truly an unprecedented one.
No, you're right. Bizarre. Did any of us ever envisage we'd be making the sort of decisions or doing the sort of things we are? God, I will yearn for a day out at the football, getting in the car, driving. It would... I think we took it all for granted a little bit, didn't we? It's been surreal.
And I think, normally if I have a chat with club people that are involved with clubs in Wales, it's normally the international clearance is the big thing that we discuss. Okay. And before we've even started this conversation, we've had a conversation that you've got different rules for hairdressers now.
Absolutely, yes. We've been open since last Monday, and the rumours are that... the retail will open here on the 12th of April, same as you, I believe. But they do like to do slightly different things, whether they're just trying to score political points. That might be the reason, I think. But I don't know. There's no logic to all of it, but I'm sure they're doing their best.
Well,
to be fair, Tim, that they've opened the golf courses down there and all, really upsets me. But
I know, yeah. And it does make, on the face of it, it makes sense, doesn't it? That it's outdoors. And there was a time during the lockdown at one stage in Wales where we were desperate to get fans back into the game at our level. And they allowed casinos to open, yet they wouldn't allow us to have fans out in the open air. And there have been little things like that have seemed so illogical at times. But I'm told there's a theory behind it, and that's fair enough. And listen, it's been very difficult for anybody who's making decisions, that's for sure.
I'm glad you know what?
You mentioned international clearance, Tim. I was secretary at Merthyr for 10 years or more. And do you know what? That time, international clearance was a one-day event. I put the request in the morning, and invariably, Dave, managers like yourself like to sign people on a Friday. So invariably, the request would come to sign a guy on a Friday. The international clearance said a good win. And by 4 o'clock Friday afternoon, I've had it back. So, I mean, the whole system has changed the overall recognition now, where some of the clubs just are waiting 30 days for the international clearance between England and Wales and vice versa.
Well, I had that. Yeah. I had my fingers burnt at Wimbledon, where we signed Jermaine Darlington. And he'd retired. I talked him out of retirement because he had played for me at the start of his career. And I talked him out of retirement, but his last club was Cardiff. And our secretary at the time, new in the job, didn't get international clearance. And to be fair, I didn't realise it because he was coming out of retirement, but it's your last club. So it ended up... it ended up in the House of Commons. I remember Prime Minister's questions. Where Tony Blair was questioning about this, because we were done 18 points. We were docked 18 points because Jermaine had... And then we eventually got it down to 3, which in the end got us in the playoffs, but we lost in the playoffs. But I always remember thinking... I always thought for me... ball call, by the way, so I don't just take normal phone calls. But for me, I always remember thinking there should be an if you're in the same league. I never got the international clearance stuff, but no. That's only from a manager, and you're right.
No, listen,
you know,
I'm with you, Dave. I've never quite got it. You know, I suppose for us as a secretary in Wales and in a club in Wales that plays in England, international clearance is at the forefront of your mind. But for guys like yourselves who do it once in a blue moon, it's very easy to be missed. You know, and you know, in the range of registering players incorrectly, you know, I would have thought it's one of those ones that's so easily done, you know, and it's not done with any intention of gaining an advantage in any sort of way. So, you know, it's something I've always thought that we should be quite lenient on, because ultimately it's just an administrative mistake, no more than that. What I've always found strange, David, is we might go off subject. If you look at the Football League in the Premier League, you very, very rarely see any points deducted because of a legal registration.
Yeah.
In the semi-pro game, it's virtually automatic. Yeah. Points are gone straight away.
Yeah.
So, there's obviously a way of getting around it, isn't there? You know, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, listen, I remember and I'm going back over old stuff, but I remember then we got it cut from 18 points to 3, and everybody at Wimbledon was having a party. I was gutted because I thought, there's no way they can sack me. You know, I was going to get another year because if they could dock the 18 points, it wasn't my fault. So what happened is it got reduced to 3. We could beat the playoffs, and I got the heavos. I was trying to pretend I was happy it had been reduced.
That does seem unreasonable, I have to tell you. And there was a team in Wales, Welshpool, got deducted 38 points, and they got relegated from the League of Wales on the same basis. A guy from Staffordshire, you know, and it seems crazy to me.
I suppose we'd better get it back online.
Well,
drifting all over the place.
I noticed the glee in Anthony's face when he said he was a former secretary, because I think you've exemplified there as to why it must be one of the toughest jobs in non-league football. But you know, there's a man in front of us here, Dave, that's had a pretty tough season himself with his many many hats on. I mentioned the many hats because I think it's important. One of those is obviously being on the FA Council. So every week we speak about the uncertainty of ease and the decisions we think have been made, but we still don't know if they've been ratified or anything like that. Can you give us any timelines or indications on when things like the null and void of Step 2 and relegation situation, Step 1's going to be finalised, and the Step 3 to 6 curtailment, are we there with ratification now?
Certainly, we've had a FA Council meeting this morning, funnily enough, and certainly in terms of the ratification of Steps 3 to 6, I think we're there. It's more or less done. I think everybody was expecting it to be done today. But what happens is, because we're in this Zoom world that we're in, the actual resolutions are passed a day or two after the council meeting. So we haven't quite got there yet, but that will be ratified in a few days. I think the Step 1 and 2 thing will take a little bit longer, I think, because I don't think all the papers would have been ready to go to FA Council. So that may take a little longer, and there may be a get-together again in order to ratify that decision.
And just on it, Anthony, obviously, you know, the guys that tried to put together the North and South combination to get some sort of football and promotion. What was, you know, tell us your own opinion by all means, but tell us also why it was knocked back at the Alliance.
That's a tricky one. I've got to respect the Alliance confidentiality at the moment. It's no secret it's been knocked back, Dave, you know that. And that's a fact. And at the Alliance committee, the first thing we have to do was make the decision to ratify the original resolutions sent out by the National League, which we did. We then considered the proposal by the 15 clubs that wanted to continue playing. We also then took into account any other options in terms of coming up with a sporting solution. And listen, the outcome was the decision that was announced last Friday, which you're all aware of. Now, those detailed decisions are to be sent in due course to the clubs themselves first. And I've got to respect that in terms of the actual opinions. I think the announcement of the FMA last Friday more or less tells you why to maintain the integrity of the competition, etc. And when the decision, when the reasons are made out in full, and we have asked them, you know, to actually get the detailed reasons on why we came to those decisions, and then, you know, I think personally that people will understand why we made the decision we did. But it would be unfair of me to go into that now when the clubs themselves haven't had them. In fair.
No, listen, I understand that, but it's, you know, it's a question that we want
to ask. Yeah, we all want to know. Of course, and it's a question everybody wants to know, of course.
Well, I do think you're right. I mean, I think you're right on. I mean, I'd spoken to Alex and Mark over the weeks as they were compiling it. And we were aware that there was stuff going on in the background. And, you know, at the same time, we were asked to sort of keep quiet about that because it was in the better interest that
it
might happen. And we did that. So, you know, I absolutely understand that you've got to be careful. But at the right time, there will be a statement.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A public statement, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. They're going to issue a full detailed statement to the clubs and publicly explaining exactly why the decisions were taken as they were. I think that's really important. But we were obviously concerned last week that the clubs at step two and step one probably were waiting upon the result of the Alliance. So it was important to get the decision out quickly rather than sit on it and wait for the full reasons to come out later. But, it's difficult because everybody wants to know. I'm in that situation myself, you know, as a fan, you know, we want to know what's going on. So I get that completely.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, sorry, Tim, just the one is, no matter what's said, I think the one thing we all agreed on and everybody I spoke to agreed on is that no matter what happens, not everyone's going to agree with it. The only thing we can agree on is, you know, and that's an absolute certainty. Sorry, Tim, I interrupted
you. No, I think, you know, that was the point I was going to make, and it's a case of people understanding that having differences of opinion, and it's something that we've spoken about with Nick, with Mark.
Of course.
Differences of opinion make non-league football better for all of us. But I think actually the way that those negotiations and discussions actually took place behind the closed doors and everybody, you know, trying to work together and find a solution shows the best of non-league football.
I think that was a bright point. Yes, I agree completely. You know, for me personally, I think you've got to give Mark Ames a bit of credit there for trying to try and accommodate the solution, really. It's so easily could have been dismissed. When the original resolution's been passed, we're not considering anything, you know. But I think the fact that they were listening and brought the proposal to the Alliance Committee did prove that they did listen and they were trying to come up with a solution that hopefully most people would agree with.
Yeah. Now, both Nick Robinson and Mark Harris have spoken about the need and desire to make sure that we have something like almost like supplementary rules to cover all eventualities going forward. You know, the benefit of hindsight is a fabulous thing, and it nags away at anybody that's having to make decisions. But because, you know, time's already running away, we're almost at the end of March. Has any progress been able to be made on that so that we can make sure that next season goes ahead as smoothly as possible? You know, we're not expecting them to be able to second guess everything.
You're spot on, Tim. I think, listen, I strongly enough, I think if we didn't put those things in place for next season, we'd be derelict in our duty now, to be honest. We've had long enough to prepare. I couldn't agree more. Little things have been put in place. We've announced that we're starting the start date of the season, and we've announced the end date of the season. But we've got that extra month in place, and that's going to be written into the rules before the season starts, so that the extra month is there if we need it. We are going to try and, I think for each individual league, they will look at their own league cups to see if they can come up with some solutions in sort of tempering midweek fixtures so that we can leave things a bit more open. But the one thing we've learned is the unpredictability of what COVID brings. Not just COVID, but the unpredictability of the restrictions that can be put into place regionally and nationally. And that's what we've found extremely difficult over the last 12 months. So there are other things that we want to do. We want to have rule changes in place before a ball is kicked that allow us to implement an alternative competition quickly if we need to, or if the clubs want it, and in a format that perhaps we're not always used to. So we want that flexibility written into the rules before we start. That hasn't been done as yet, but it's definitely on the table, and it's something all three leagues want. So I think that will be done in some shape or form. The other thing we've done is we haven't really in the past done the fixtures in two blocks. When we compile the fixtures, Atos do our fixtures in the same way as they do the Premier League, the Football League, the National League, and then us. And Atos do our fixtures in blocks of six. So the fixtures are done in six separate blocks of the season. This time, we're going to try and do them in blocks of two, so that each team, to the best of our ability, is played once before we play them again. Now, that's not going to be completely possible because of FA Cup, FA Trophy, and perhaps slotting games in where you can. And that's going to be for individual leagues to sort out. But I don't want anybody to think that we're doing that, thinking that once we've completed 50% of the games, we can come up with a solution. That's not what this is about. This is about completing 50% of the games, hopefully. And then if we have to have an alternative competition, adding that on so that we can come up with a percentage of games throughout the season that allows promotion and relegation to take place. When the survey was done for clubs at step 3 to 6, one of the results of that survey was that the clubs were split. The vast majority thought at our level that 66% of games would be enough to come up with a points per game. The rest of the clubs thought 75%. But what it did tell us was that the very minimum was 2/3. So that gave us, and I think that's probably right actually in fairness, I think we have to try and get to that sort of stage before we start talking about coming up with a points per game solution. Now, I talk as the vice chairman of the league who last season would have gone for a points per game solution. But we went along with the opinion of the National League system as a whole. And I have to say, I don't regret that. I think we were right to do that, because points per game is fine. But what we quickly learned was, as a league, us wanting points per game meant nothing if the leagues below us and the leagues above us didn't want it. Because once promotion and relegation's gone, points per game is a red herring. The best you're going to do is pick up a trophy, and you're still playing in the same league next year. So it became a bit of a red herring at that point. So it's something that has to be done in conjunction with the other leagues around you. So, we are trying to put all those contingencies into place. And I say we're trying. We are determined to put those contingencies into place. Some are in place already, the easier ones. The ones about integrating rules and regulations into competition will take a little bit longer. And we probably won't have that in place perhaps till April or May. But we certainly will have them in place before we have the AGMs and the leagues, which I think are planned for around June. So that's certainly the intention.
That's a really helpful explanation of the situation, because as you intimated early on about the council decisions, we're living in these unprecedented times, so everything's a little bit slower than it would be, despite the fact that we can see each other via Zoom. There's still legal implications to everything you do. We spoke with Mark Ives, and that was the reason for the 28 days for the resolutions originally that were put to the clubs. There's always legal implications. It's not guys like yourself dragging your heels, because I'd imagine you've got another 20 things on your pile of to-dos, so you'd like this one out of the way. And beyond just everything within football, you're answerable to the clubs, to the FA, there's also the government implications as well. And,
yeah, absolutely.
We've got, in England, we've got the part B of step one of this roadmap coming into play, where Dave's already polished his golf club, so he's looking forward to the end of the month where organised sports, he'll be out on the golf course.
Won't be long, Dave, it won't be long.
But we've got clubs... at non-league level, the senior clubs, the senior teams won't be playing competitive fixtures, but they're looking to play some friendlies, and definitely youth teams are up and running. But we've had some indication from the FA today as to how those rules are going to impact on how we can bring football back. But again, that's still awaiting clarification from the government.
No, I don't think we've had any real clarity, really, have we, in terms of how it affects step 3 to 6, our level of the game. I think, we've got some more clarity about the elite status, as they call it. But I think for the rest of us, and perhaps grassroots is probably a little bit further forward than us in terms of when I was playing football on a Saturday and Sunday, you didn't have spectators. So it was just a case of getting the game played. But for our level of the game, where spectators are concerned and the finances are more onerous, I don't think really we still have the clarity that we need, that's been very slow in coming forward. And there's some suggestions that the roadmap laid out for the elite game is going to be the same sort of roadmap that's laid out for us. So until we get that clarified, it's difficult. But, we sit, as you said, we go to meetings and we like to make decisions. The one thing that last season, I think, has taught us, and I think Mark and Nick would agree, that perhaps we should have taken a little bit more time in thinking of a solution, where we tried. And very often clubs will come to us and say, look, we want certainty. We want to know what's going on. We want to know so we can plan. I get that. I think last season we probably could have done with taking a week or two more to sit and look at what was coming. I don't think it would have made a huge difference, but it might have made a difference in terms of promotion and relegation last season. And we're learning all the time, I think. I certainly am anyway, that's for sure.
I think that's the important thing. We've all been around the block a few times and we've never seen anything like it. And when you've never seen anything like it, you're going to make your best guess. You're not going to get them all right. But what's vital is that the ones you get wrong, You improve from it. I think that's all that anybody can ask of us. And I say us because we're all in it. We're all in it together. And
I think last season, what we've learned is we should have gone to the clubs and got more information from them. That was the big thing last season. We said, look, the clubs want leadership. And very often clubs will say to us, look, we've elected you. We want you to decide and make decisions for us. I think that's right and correct. But when you're making decisions of this magnitude, where you are effectively saying you're now going to be out of business for the next 3 months, or the season stopped, everything you've done just counts for nothing, they are decisions of such magnitude that we should go to the clubs and get opinions. It's far too big to just make a rash decision on. So that's been the biggest learning curve for me, I think, over the last 12 months. I think we've been a lot more fortunate than the National League. We've been able to a large degree, bring the clubs with us. Not everybody's happy, obviously, but certainly the vast majority of clubs that did the survey, I think we were like 76% said if we can't play till April 1st, then it's null and void or curtailed or whatever you want to call it. So I think that put us in a fortunate position. And I think I can speak for the three leagues. Since that decision was made, and I don't want to speak too soon now because somebody might be on the phone tomorrow, but I don't think we've had any dissenting voices from the clubs to us. about the decision. I think they all knew the inevitability of it.
Yeah, I think we found from talking to people, there's grumbles, but I grumble when I get out of bed in the morning some days, so it's just having to get
out. As fans, we grumble, don't we? Because we want to get out. As fans, we want to get out. And we're making decisions in the best interest of the clubs, probably the fans, and they've got very valid reasons for this, you know, in terms of their mental health. They desperately want to get out. And we understand that completely.
Yeah. And I think as well that it's, you know, Nick Robinson actually said he nearly lives by the rule, you can't please all the people all of the time.
No, impossible.
And,
yeah. Impossible.
You know, and I think that, you know, certainly as a football manager, you know, I've won games and had people moan at me. So I get that. You know, I really get that.
But I think
what'll be interesting for me is that when we've all learned lessons, I'll be interested to see what lessons that the National have learned out of it. Because the bottom line is that you were curtailed quite early and you were more or less done. They've been flipping one way and another every week, like relegation, no relegation, promotion, no promotion, north and south, not plan. They've tried, and don't get me wrong, this isn't a criticism of them.
Everybody's
tried to do something, if you want. But I just think that I can see that the Trident lads, your three leagues, making decisions and being together quite quickly because you haven't had as much mess, for want of a better description. But the National have, they've had an awful lot more on their plate. And for me, I'll be interested to see what they agree on as even that elite and non-elite line where it was meant to be at the bottom of North and South, you know?
No, Dave, I'm not here to stick up for them because, you know, they make their own decisions to a degree. There's a number of things from what you've said that I think has changed. You know, I think, obviously, Mark, I used to come into the job. Mark's experience at the FA and at our level of the game is invaluable. So, you know, I got on very well with Michael Tattersall, I have to say. Mark Ives is a different animal completely. And, you know, what Mark has done over the last few months, from our perspective, he's included us at step 3 and 4 far more than ever before. So that there's been a positive change as far as we're concerned. Now,
Say as well, he's included us.
Yeah,
he's included the media. Are. He's come in front of us. He's someone that we can not always get the hold of, but he has come and he's done a show where we've asked him whatever we wanted to. So I get that. You know, I agree with you on that.
No, absolutely. Now, there's a couple of things I think the National League would dealt with. A bum deal to a degree. I've mentioned this before, but you know, Tim, when the National League tried desperately to get cash for their clubs to continue, and they originally were very successful in getting that £10 million. Now, I can't think, I've said this to Dave in the past, I can't think of any scenario where £10 million is handed over by government and said, there you are, off you go, sort it out. You know, I mean, how on earth do you give a board of directors? I can tell you now, as a Southern League board of directors, I'd be terrified, you know, because the last thing you want to do is something wrong. That this money should be handled by professionals who are well-versed in grant applications and dealing with companies and knowing what they need to survive. And I think that original $10 million, had it been administered by, and I don't want to lay the blame at anybody's door, but if it had been administered by the Football Foundation, by Sport England, the Football Stadium Improvement Fund, I think you would have seen a far different outcome than you've seen. So I think, to a degree, I think the National League board were put in an extremely difficult position by people who should have known better. You know?
I agree. And what I would say is, and I'm trying to, I must be in a good mood today because I'm sticking up for everybody, but I genuinely think that even at government at that particular time, were in a mess. They were like, here, we have to deal with that. We have to deal with the other way. So, I can even cut them a bit of slack. But I do agree with you with the national board, and I've criticised them on the FA over the years. But,
of course,
but I do agree with you. They were given a load of money and cut loose with it, you know. And
it's unheard of, Dave. You know, and I think they were on such a high that they were able to get that money to continue that they probably thought our problems are over, whereas in effect the problem started. And I think the other problem the National League have always had is that the two steps that they deal with are totally two different levels of football. You know, there's a massive difference between step one and step two. And I think that's really difficult to manage in the terms of one set of circumstances. I think for us at step three and four, what our clubs do are very similar. But let's be fair, the national division is more akin to the Football League than it is to non-league football.
Well, I can say from my experience with a club when we were in the National League or the Conference Premier as it was back then, being one of the only part-time clubs was really difficult because they treat the league as if everybody is full-time, which is understandable because majority are, but it did create barriers, divisions, and just problems for the part-time clubs. And you can see that at step two.
Yeah, you can. I can remember we were in the conference for 10 years with Merthyr, just less than that. And it was a fabulous experience. The conference at that time was a standalone division. So at that time, you had, apart from the likes of Darlington or Lincoln, who came in for one season or two, it was primarily what we regarded as the elite of non-league. Barnet, United, those sort of clubs. And it was a fantastic division to be in. But the majority of them were still part-time. And we loved every minute of it, to be honest. I think the league has moved on massively now. You know, the majority are full-time. And in fairness to the National League, they have to, you know, address the problems the clubs like Knox County and everybody else face day in, day out. They've got a large wage bill. They've got a number of employees who rely upon them. And it's very difficult, I think, to address the problems that you face at Notts County and then still address the problems that you'll have at some clubs that I would put on a par of the clubs at our level. So I think that's a difficulty as well. But I think what you said about Mark putting himself forward, people like us, we have to come on. We have to address and be clear and say, look, this is what we think. We might not agree with you. You might not agree with us. We might not be right. But I think it's important for us to come on and say, look, we've done this because of X, Y, and Z, and that's why. And what are we hiding? There's nothing to hide. Honestly, nothing to hide.
No, I think you're right. Look, I quite enjoy this because I get to have a go at people because I spent a whole life with people having a go at me. So it's really like therapy for me, you know. So
I get that.
But there's a question just come into my head, which is way off the kilter, but I'm going to go with it. When you were talking about the sort of national and neither's north and south, is it more complicated now that there's north and south? Because we used to, I remember going back in the day when the Isthmian League went straight into the conference.
Yeah, that's it. That's what we did at Merthyr. Yeah, we won the Southern League and the division went straight in. This is a personal opinion.
Yeah,
a personal opinion, absolutely. My personal opinion, I don't think it's become better. But I say that because what National North and South did, in my opinion, was allow players to think they'd been promoted and ask for more wages, when in effect they hadn't. What happened was that 20-odd clubs got demoted. And you know, all it did was create another tier where the level of wages went up. And maybe what it did do, which has helped, is probably enabled clubs to get better prepared for the National Division or the Football League. That, I understand that. But I think that could have been put in place anyway at our levels had we done it, because we were feeding from three into one. Now, in terms of the pyramid, and we're looking for the perfect pyramid, you know, from next season or the season after, we're going to have 1, 2, 4 and 8. And that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? So you know, I'm not advocating for one reason or we should scrap north and south and go back. We are where we are now, and I think having the pyramid is the right thing. It's not something I was in favour of at that time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was just something that just I was thinking about as you said it, you know, just because I've been around long enough, as we all have, to remember before North and South. But I do think that the nail on the head is it makes it a smaller step.
So yeah, of course it does.
It's sort of a step in the North and South, and if you're going to go again, then it's a step. Whereas I remember back in the day, the step in the conference was it was a leap, you know, it wasn't a step, but. Anyway, Tim, sorry, I digress again.
You digress again, Dave. Yeah. one thing that I wanted to say, one of the great things of getting Anthony on, like the other chairman, is we like to educate people and get them to understand that you're not just these guys that sit in an office. You are real people, but not only real people. You've got your own club that you've been involved with, what, 20 plus, however, more. More.
I was on the turnstile when I was 11.
Only 15 years then,
And I'm 57 now, so that gives you an idea.
But I think it's important that people understand that you are making these decisions with experience of how it impacts on clubs. And yeah, the world's changed and it's constantly changing, things like that. But also, you know, with your Merthyr Town hat on, you were one of the clubs who sadly couldn't start this season due to cross-border issues, financial issues and things like that. It must have been a really tough call at the time, but with hindsight, probably one of the best decisions ever made.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I should say, since I became vice chairman of the Southern League, I severed my actual ties professionally with Merthyr Town. Listen, I'm there every Saturday, don't get me wrong, right? And I'm still in contact with them on a daily basis. But I'm not officially a board member there now. But listen, it's a fan-owned club. It was a difficult decision. Things were changing daily, to be honest, at the start of the season. And the situation in Wales was different to England. So whereas in England, the situation had been said that you could have, if you remember, there was a stage one where there was 200 and 300 fans, and then it went to 400 and 600 fans. So we actually started the season with 400 and 600 fans. I think it was the extra preliminary round, the FA Cup was at the lower level. Now at that time in Wales, you couldn't have anybody. There was no fans involved. So there was no question that Merthyr had considered playing every game away. They'd considered playing without fans. They'd considered a number of things. But what happened was, it became apparent through the Welsh FA and Welsh government that not only were Merthyr not going to be allowed fans, they weren't allowed to travel to England to play either. So they couldn't play any friendlies, home or away. They did eventually get the agreement that they could play their league program from September, home or away, but without fans. Now, what changed? That was the intention. The first game that Merthyr were going to play was against Poole Town in the FA Cup, and that game was 2 or 3 days away. I think the season was starting on the Saturday. I think it was the 12th or 19th of September, if you remind me, or the 5th, I can't remember. But on the what happened was that Merthyr came to me on the Thursday and said, look, we've had a meeting with the Welsh government, and things have changed. One is, they've told us that no fans are going to be allowed in at least until the beginning of November. And that was because they classed Merthyr as non-elite in Wales, whereas they classed the League of Wales as elite. So Merthyr were classed as non-elite, which in effect meant you couldn't play football at all. So for Merthyr to be able to play without the crowd, they had to gain elite status. And that meant having to test the players twice a week, having to do daily health checks. And this all became apparent. So Merthyr came to me and said, look, we've got a problem, what are we going to do? I said, well, I'll have to take it to the board. You know, we already knew about Guernsey at that point. But I said, they'll have to go to the board, but more importantly, I'm not going to be able to get involved in it. I'll report it to Jason, and you'll have to deal with him directly. So I reported to Jason. Jason got in touch with the club, and the long and short of it is the club made an official application to have it to not start the season or have a hiatus, whatever you want to call it, to have a season off. On the basis that Guernsey had been given that opportunity, and there was talk at the time that Jersey and Isle of Man may be in the same situation. So the league considered it, recommended it, agreed it. What happened then was, originally, the fans, who weren't directly consulted on that, went up in the air completely. You know, there was a furore of opposition to it. When they sat down and explained it to them and explained what they'd done, that was calmed over. But for a week or two, things weren't great at the football club, in all honesty. But I think you're right, Tim, what you said. In hindsight, I think it proved to be the best possible decision they could have made, and it's worked out well for them. What there have been downsides. The manager left, Gavin, who left, and obviously all the squad left, and they went to play elsewhere. So Merthyr now will start next season having to recruit the squad from nil. Wow. Which is going to be difficult for the new manager and assistant manager. And listen, it will be difficult. But I think in hindsight, it was the right thing, because in Wales, there's been a lot less opportunity to get fans into grounds and a lot less opportunity to get the hospitality open in general than there has in England throughout the season. Although we're more or less in the same boat now. But I think in hindsight, Merthyr would not ever have been allowed to have had fans into that ground throughout the season. Now that we know this, but we wouldn't have known that at the time.
Yeah, and
wow.
Week in, week out, I guess you speak to chairman, people involved in football, and you mentioned, you know, Merthyr weren't necessarily in a great place and to continue the season. We hear about clubs in financial crisis. With the curtailment of the season now and this short gap, there's finance available through funding pots and things like that. Do you think we're going to be on a much better footing to start the season with the full complement of clubs? Or there's always frailties, there's always things that are going to come up, but is that one of the benefits of this curtailment and being able to plan ahead for next season?
I have to be honest. Everything we've done has been done on the priority of making sure the clubs are there next August. That's been the number one priority all the way through. So obviously the furlough scheme played a huge part in that, you know, and that allowed us, that made a huge difference to the clubs still being there. But I know Droylsden went, didn't they, in the north. We lost Droylsden. But, you know, we feared at one stage that we'd lose an awful lot more. And now, I believe, and I hope I'm right, I think they'll all be there to kick off the season next August, which is the main thing. Absolutely. I've been involved with Merthyr originally. I said to you, I was secretary. At that time, I wasn't a director of the club. And when I first got involved in Merthyr, there was a guy who owned the club and lived in Oxfordshire. And he had a proposal to build 200 houses in the town and saw taking over the football club as a way to ingratiate himself with the local authority, etc. Once that scheme fell apart, he walked away. And we were left in ruin, basically, you know. So I've seen all the sides of the club. I've seen Merthyr successful in terms of non-league football. I've seen us get into Europe. I've seen us win the Welsh Cup. We go into the conference. We finished fourth. And I've seen us in the depths of despair where I didn't know if I was going to be able to get the team together on the Saturday because we didn't have wages. I've been through the whole gamut. And you know, I've paid all the bills myself at times in order to keep the club functioning. You know, and there was a time at the football club when, because the board was the way it was, I was virtually the only supporter there who was involved in the club, and I was the secretary. So the board members weren't fans of the club, you know. So, listen, we've all seen football clubs go through these tough times, And it has been tough, you know. But this is why the priority for us was ensuring that every decision we made was based around enabling the clubs to survive. And that's why I think sometimes the decisions are at odds with what supporters want, but hopefully more in tune with what the clubs want.
I think, you know, listening to that, in all honesty, a football manager isn't a football supporter.
And it
brings its own pain, believe me. But when I hear that, I'm actually glad I'm not a football supporter, because Tim's had similar stuff at Hayes, and when you speak to directors and supporters of what the local clubs around here, the pain you feel with, it's frightening, you know, because it's part of what you are, and as a football manager, you're like a hard and fired gun, you know, and you love the club you're with that week, you know, and the next week you're somewhere else.
I go back to when I was born in 64. So in 1980, I was 16. Merthyr were playing Alder Church on a Tuesday night, and I went on the team bus as a fan. I get to the outskirts of Alder Church, and I'm at the time, a guy called Doug Ross that comes up to me and says, "Listen, I need to take your scarf off you. You're going to be sub tonight because Graham West hasn't turned up." Now, there's only one sub in the place. I'm 16 and thinking, this is great. So I'm sub. I end up going on and playing left back. And I was talking about this only last week. There was a guy up front for Alder Church called Phil Harper, and I've never forgotten him because he frightened the life out of me for about 80 minutes. Right? He terrified me. We got battered 4-1. But I played under the name of Graham West. Now that happened to me 4 times in that year. I played at Bromsgrove, Milton Keynes, Alder Church. I can't remember elsewhere. There was another one. 4 times that happened. That was non-league football at the time. You know, we've moved on massively since then. You know, with the internet and everything else now, we all know the players of the other teams that come. And those days have all gone, but that's what happened to me at 15. I can remember another scenario when I was secretary, where we're playing Farnborough on a Tuesday night. The electricity's cut off 11 o'clock in the morning. And the chairman rings me from Oxfordshire and says, "Don't tell them. We'll say that we've had a power cut when they arrive." I said, "I'm not doing that. I'm telling them now." And I had to resign at 4 o'clock because I told them that the game was off because there was no electricity. They said, you know, and listen, these are the common things that go throughout non-league football. It's what we do. It's what we do throughout our lives, isn't it? Yeah. You know, and it's only Merthyr I got to thank for doing what I'm doing now. It's all to do with the years I put in at Merthyr. It's nothing to do with anything else. You know, so I always said I wish my father had taken me to Barcelona. Yeah, to be honest, he didn't.
But again, I think it's so important that we get to hear these stories and get to understand, because you telling me that means that I think that the game's in good hands when you're having to make decisions. Now, again, not everybody's going to agree with those decisions. You know, I probably fall out as many times with my wife over decisions in my house as we agree. So that's just life. That's the way it is.
Yeah, of course.
But you get a say, do you?
I just nod and smile sweetly.
That's the answer.
But I think it is important that the fans, as you say, understand that the people that are making those decisions
are fans
and have got experience. You know, and I always say to people, your own experience is all about making errors and sort of learning learning what you could have done better the next time. And I think that's where we are with the non-league game at the moment. You touched on it earlier with Mark Ives and the situation with the National League. And I do sense, before Christmas, we discussed on this show that our fears about non-league almost ripping itself apart because it was going in the elite, non-elite direction, and there was money here, not money there. And I do sense, as much as there's unrest and there are these grumbles, we are more together, and we can push forward and you know, not that we get much national media coverage, but when the national media do talk about us, it should all be about how the game's going forward and young players are getting the opportunity to go up into the Premier League. I did a Zoom thing last week about, you know, opportunities and how players still can get spotted and move on. That's what we want people to be understanding that non-league's about.
When I was growing up, Bertha had a first team and a reserve team. The reserve team played in the World League. They were the only two teams at the club. So the only time you played on Pendant Park was you played for Merthyr or you got to one of the local schools' cup finals. So, and it was the biggest day of the year, like you get to the cup final, you play in Pendant Park. Merthyr's no different to anybody else. I talk about Merthyr, but I could be talking about Redditch, I could be talking about Cinderford, I could be talking about anybody. The fact is, all these clubs now have 20-odd teams. They've got the kids training on the pitches. They've got girls' teams, women's teams. They've got walking football teams. The football clubs that we now look after are totally different animals to what we had when I was a kid. You know, the place in the community is ingrained. You know, all the facilities are used. There's more and more 3G pitches coming. And their facilities now are being used by so many more people in the ground. Nothing I like more than seeing kids walking around town in a Merthyr shirt because they're playing for the academy and themselves or whatever, you know. And that never happened in my day. Never, ever happened. And that's not Merthyr, as I said, that's not specific to Merthyr. That's specific. We've got Redditch United, who've got something like 36 teams. And Evesham United, who've got 20-odd teams. You know, there's so much more being done now through our football clubs than was done years ago. And it's just as important to the community as the first team is.
Yeah, and I think something that Nick Robinson mentioned a couple of weeks back was his concern that people would have got out of the habit of going to non-league. And I think that where clubs are more involved with the community, it'll be easier for them to step that up and you know, football will pick up.
I think we're all open with it. It's for me that when we start, people are so keen to get people to be on high. I hope, you know, that we can get out and about and get some football. And I just hope that we're able to carry that bounce with us a little while. I know you're right when Nick says people get out of the habit, but I think people have to get out and about. Tim, you know, I'm hoping that will encourage spectators to come along, which is what we saw with some clubs last year when the league clubs couldn't have spectators. We had many clubs in our league were hitting the 600 limit that they could have at the time, which they wouldn't normally have done. So I don't know, it'd be interesting to see how it pans out, but I think I think when the start actually comes and we can get back to some normality, it'll be a period of people being in a good place. I hope that things are getting back to normal, and it'll be a good feeling around the place, I hope.
Well, Anthony, we've already kept you away from other Zooms. I'm sure you must have become a Zoom expert in the last year, and
I think we all have, haven't we?
I was saying about Anthony and the other guys. I feel like they're on my Christmas card list now. I've sort of been I've spoken to them so much in the last few weeks. It's all right. Good stuff. It's all been different shows, you know. But no, it's right. good to speak to you, mate.
I really enjoyed it.
Dave normally gets worried in front of people from the FA.
I was at that bad final, you know. I watched it as well. And you know, I've seen his teams play for years. And I've only got to speak to him the last couple of weeks. So this is a positive that's come out of this pandemic.
Hopefully we'll get a beer soon, mate.
That'd be nice.
Anthony, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. And hopefully we'll speak to you again very soon. Let's round off the rest of the week's non-league news. As ever, it's back on over to the Non-League Paper Towers. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to senior writer there, Mr. David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. I sense that things are slotting into place you know, it's not great that we haven't got a lot of competitive non-league football to look forward to. But at the end of the month, there'll be some football beginning at non-elite level. We've still got at step one continuing. But obviously, since we last spoke, the season at step two and all the proposals and negotiations there have come to an end. It's felt a bit like this week. I don't know if it's the same for you. It's a bit like going back to work after a fortnight's holiday. It's difficult to get fully motivated, but you feel a sense of achievement or you know, contentment.
Yeah, I'd know what that feeling's like if I had time off, Tim. But imagine it is something like along those lines. But no, you're right. There's sort of some loose ends have sort of been tied up, hasn't there? Obviously, you know, step two. He made none and void. We've had sort of the final dates of the FA Trophy and Vase from last year, but also this year as well. It sort of feels like it is sort of we're returning to sort of a fairly sort of straightforward time in non-league to an extent. I don't know how long that will last for. I mean, hopefully we, get through the season now without any sort of further issues. But then there's sort of plenty of sorting out to do over the summer with various different things like the restructure, and you know, even sort of planning ahead for the dates for next season. And so, yeah, I think you are right. It's maybe a little bit of a more straightforward time now, perhaps, which clearly we haven't had much of that in the last 12 months. But hopefully things are heading in the right direction.
Yeah, and obviously step one still very active. Stockport County this week signing Paddy Madden from League One Fleetwood Town.
Yeah, that's right. That was a really sort of eye-raising sort of signing. That it's clearly a statement from Stockport of their intentions, what they want to do, not only this season and sort of the immediate future, but that's a signing if you go up to League Two, who will fit right in that division as well. No sort of secrets really anymore about what Stockport trying to do there. And someone of Paddy Madden's experience in the league, winning promotion with Yeovil to the Championship, all the goals he scored for Fleetwood in the league. A really sort of big signing, probably sort of up there with he had a Rooney signing when he joined Salford not too long ago. So, yeah, a pretty big one in non-league terms.
Yeah, and another announcement this week, South Shields announcing they are going to head to the full-time model from the start of the new season. So we do have some positive stories coming through from non-league.
Yeah, we do. It seems like all of a sudden sort of quite a busy time. Like I said, sort of the focus has shifted away from what's happening with leagues and things like that to more club matters, and I think probably that South Shields news doesn't really sort of come as too much of a surprise. You know, clearly the club has big ambitions to climb the pyramid. I suppose it is probably a bit unusual for a team to go full time at step three. But clearly they feel like that's a step they should take now. Obviously they've had their progress altered a little bit in the last couple of seasons, largely out of their hands because of the way things have gone. That they'll be thinking, if we can go full time now, get up next season, and then they're in a good position in the National League North to really take things on there. There's that National League North is always such a difficult division. There's other full-time teams in that league, so they'll feel that they feel like they have to get a head start now, really, on that. So not sort of a massive surprise really to see that one.
Yeah, I know. We love good stories in non-league, and I don't know if this is one that you're fully across, but I know that the non-league paper have covered it. A great story that Hanley Town of the North West Counties Premier Division have announced Yeovil's Carl Dickinson will be joining them at the end of his current Glovers contract to become their player manager, which is great to see that non-league keeping hold of some of non-league's greatest.
Yeah, that's right. I spoke to Carl this morning on his way to Yeovil training. He lives up in Stoke-on-Trent, which is where Hanley play in the North West Counties League. He lives only 20 minutes from their ground and travels all the way to Yeovil most days to train and play for them. But he's, you know, a sort of ultimate professional, really. Obviously had a great career in the Football League with the likes of Stoke and Port Vale and clubs up there. You know, more recently he's been at Yeovil. He came with them into the National League, but was a big part of their success last year and is playing a lot of games again this time round at the age of 33. So you know, still very much wants to keep on playing. It's a player manager role at Hanley, but I think he feels that he's got to have an eye on the future now. He's not getting any younger, so you know, he couldn't really sort of turn down this opportunity at Hanley. Obviously, it's a big drop from where he has played and where he's currently playing now. But you know, in order to get into somewhere into management, then you know, I think he feels like he has to take this opportunity. And you know, he was saying as well, it's one thing that he lives 20 minutes away from the ground, but you know, the club wasn't ambitious and didn't want to try and get into step four, then yeah, he wouldn't be taken there. But you know, he was keen to stress as well, obviously he's still got the rest of this season at Yeovil, so you know, his focus isn't quite on Hanley yet, and his plans for that, you know, he wants to finish this season on the high of Yeovil and try and push towards the playoffs where they've been heading in the last few months. You know, after having a pretty disastrous start, they've really turned things around. So, yeah, he wants to finish on a high there, but yeah, very much looking forward to that to getting started.
Yeah, and another story that I can see potential headlines coming from it in the Southern League. Southern League South, I think they are there at Stepford Moneyfields, have announced a new manager is going to be Glenn Turnbull. And another one that it will come into effect at the end of the season, because at the moment he's still got a job to do as manager at US Portsmouth, who are still in the FA Vars this season. So what a way to bow out at your old club and move on.
Yeah, that's right. Imagine sort of leaving on that high, I suppose, obviously in the Vars and pushing on. You know, obviously Moneyfield's a club that sort of come through the pyramid probably in recent years. And yeah, good to see him sort of getting a chance there, really. And like I say, it would be quite something if he's sort of saying goodbye to US Portsmouth, at Wembley.
Yeah, it could even top Mr. Anderson's of a final farewell at Wembley there.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
I'm sure he's looking for one last hurrah somewhere. Obviously, I'm really looking forward to reading the piece actually about Carl Dickinson, because I think it's a brilliant non-league story. But what else can we expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, lots in there again this weekend. Obviously, we've got all of the National League fixtures that are still going ahead at the moment. On that note, I've spoken to Ian White, the Weymouth chairman, just on their season and how it's been going for them. Obviously, they had that brilliant sort of double promotion under Mark Moseley, which really sort of catapulted them into the National League all of a sudden. I think took them a bit by surprise, that. But, obviously, he moved on to Southend. Brian Stock came in. They found it difficult at the start, but I think since the turn of the year they've begun to find their feet. They're currently sat outside of the bottom three, which I think is the best they could have hoped for. Obviously, avoiding relegation was always going to be the aim. Obviously, that's off the table now, so the pressure's off us a little bit. But he was sort of stressing the point that they want to earn that survival on merit, finish out of the bottom three. And then that's that way they can say they survived anyway. And sort of on that note, they're not going to be furloughing many first team players, or only the players that they had planned to put out on loan to step two clubs. But of course, now that's come to an end, it's scuppered that idea. So yeah, good to hear from Weymouth and Ian down there. Also spoke to Gavin Cowan about one of their young players that they had on the loan, Joseph Bursic, who's been called up to the England under 21, who will be part of Odie Boothroyd's squad next week when they start their Euro 2021 campaign. Yeah, the goalkeeper was on loan at Telford a couple of seasons ago and really impressed since then. He's had a few other loans other than the Football League and then gone back to his parent club, Stoke, and has really impressed in the Championship this season. So, you know, I think it's another sort of example, really, of the benefit of these young players going out into non-league and experiencing men's football for the first time, but also the impact managers like Gavin Cowan and clubs like Telford can have on these players in terms of their development. So, yeah, that was a nice sort of feel-good story, really. And yeah, we've got lots of other bits and pieces in there as well. Tony Chenzo with his regular column. We've got a nice piece from Stuart Fuller down at Lewis. You know, his thoughts are always very much on the mark. So, yeah, lots in there really for everyone at all levels.
So you might not have a game to go to on Saturday, but there's a reason to be following non-league and picking up the non-league paper on a Sunday. Always a great read and last beyond Sunday as well. It's better than a packet of Rolos. I don't know if that may become a new catchphrase or not, but yeah, maybe
I think that one's on the mast.
I'll be doing the new masthead catch line. That one better than a packet of Rolos. and in turn. David Richardson, I don't know, a bit better than a bag of Skittles? I don't know. As always, a pleasure to have you on the show and thank you for joining us.
Cheers, Dave. Thanks.
And that's it for this week. And another lengthy one for you. Apologies if we're taking up more of your time than intended, but I think important that we get to speak to these people and we get some honesty from them as well. But as indicated at the front end of the show, if you have any stories you want us to investigate or to just probe around, please do get in touch. You can find us throughout the season and join in the debate on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anson's there at Dave Anson 78. Myself at Tim Fuel. Thank you for listening. Thank you to all of my guests. Find us and listen to us on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, a number of other things, places as well. I need to pull up a full list, but do a search for the Non-League Football Show and you should be able to find us there. Listen to us on your smart speakers and podcast aggregation sites. Hopefully the Non-League Gaffer Tapes will be coming back soon, but the archive of those original episodes are still there on Audio Boom. Stay alert, stay safe, thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.